five tribes. Yeah, what's your thoughts on the intro?
I like it.
Come on.
You could get a bit of music backing it. But
yeah, on the last episode, my cousin laughed at me, bro. And I've had a lot of people saying I need to change it. But now I'm convinced that I want people, when I walk down the street, to be like, five tribes. So I'm projecting that and hoping that happens. But we digress. Welcome, people, to another episode of Vibes and Tribes with me, your host, Baze. Look, guys, we just keep it coming, onwards and upwards. And for those of you who are joining for the first time, just want to welcome you. This is a travel, lifestyle, careers, you know, vibes. It's all that good stuff rolled into one. So if you enjoy what you listen to today, please make sure to like, subscribe, leave comments, show love. But yeah, let's get into it. So today's episode is another episode of Getting to Know the Tribe, and I'm joined by none other than Alex Finley. So I don't know if you want to quickly introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, I'm Alex. I went to university with bio, which we'll get into.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I'm year below bio, but very close with him, and I'm currently a solicitor.
Love that. So yeah, we've got a solicitor, big boy. Is he Harvey Specter? Is he Mike Ross? We're gonna find out by the end of this episode. But before we talk about your life as a solicitor, let's go way back, as we like to do on the show. Let's talk about your secondary school. So where did you go?
I went to a school called Bancrofts in Woodford Green. So that was a private school.
Okay.
So my parents aren't loaded or anything, but they always prioritised education for me and my siblings. And I was there for secondary school, and then for sixth form, went to a state sixth form.
Okay.
Which was quite a good experience in terms of showing me the contrast and making me aware of how privileged my education up until that point was. But I had a very good schooling experience.
Yeah, so I mean, you've kind of answered the question there. But so Bancroft for you look back on it fondly?
Absolutely.
Was it all boys?
No, it was boys and girls. But yeah, both from an educational and a sporting perspective, it was amazing. We had a huge field that just played football there for like hours after school.
And is it live-in or do you travel to and from?
No. So it was not a boarding school. It used to be, but it's now, kind of only day students.
Okay, only day students. And I suppose, you know, I know a few people actually that went to private school, but for those who might not know too many people, yeah, just talk to me about private school life. Are people like well behaved? Is it smaller classes? What is it that, you know, makes private school? How did you like realise your privilege, I suppose? Yeah.
So yeah, the only way I could say I realised it is through contrasting the two. So it was more that there were lots of kind of sporting opportunities, travel opportunities.
Okay.
And maybe the education standard was a little bit better, although yeah, that's debatable. It was a really kind of enriching experience because you were meeting kind of lots of students who wanted to go on and do various bits and pieces. At times, like, I certainly wasn't one of the more academic students, so they definitely had their kind of Oxbridge group, which they certainly like focused on as teachers. But for those of us that weren't necessarily in that category, there were still plenty of activities to do, and we were still encouraged to do well educationally. So my kind of experience showed me, at least, that like, I think the people in the private school were perhaps, yeah, slightly better behaved, or perhaps it was where the teachers were stricter.
Okay.
But you were constantly reminded your parents are paying money for this.
Did you have any like proper naughty people, like, so exclusions and stuff like that? Fights?
Rarely, like, yeah, maybe once that I can think of, and I was there for 9 years.
Were you allowed to leave the campus for lunch?
Yeah, as you got in, I think in sixth form onwards, you could leave. So okay. I actually wasn't when I was there, because yeah, I left before that. But it was fun. Like, it had a kind of canteen, and it had like a tuck shop and that. So there was enough space for everyone there.
Okay, so what did you study? Let's go straight to GCSE. Do you remember?
Yeah, so I did triple science, French as an elective. And yeah, I did 10 GCSEs, but I think just the standard ones.
Okay, and you said you weren't like an Oxbridge candidate, but how did you do, if you don't mind me asking?
So to be honest, like I said, I wasn't expecting to do particularly well. I only had my sister's grades as a kind of marker. As like, I want to do at least that good. She was older than me. And I got 2 A stars, 7 A's and 1 B.
Oh my goodness, not an Oxbridge candidate, people.
All I would say is that there were people getting straight A stars.
Okay, I hear that. And you say you didn't expect to get those results. Would you say those results were a result of hard work? or, you know, just naturally kind of got it? What would you say?
So actually, it reminds me of the podcast you had with the football crypto guy.
I think I
used to love playing football growing up, and was hugely competitive and hugely... I got into the process of like rote learning. I recognized that the more I practiced, the better I would be at it. Mm. And I think I just transferred that to my academics.
Okay.
And in time, I guess, just in time for my GCSEs, I was like, okay, if I want to do well in this, I probably should start going through stuff. And I kind of learned the art of cramming at that point. Nice. And yeah, just learned what I knew from football and applied it to my my academics, I guess.
And you said that you loved the sports at Bancroft. You've spoken about football there. Were you doing any other sports?
So yeah, they didn't actually play football at the school.
Oh, okay.
So it was hockey, rugby and cricket.
Okay.
So wow. The one I enjoyed the most was probably hockey, but there was always a bit of kind of tension in that I'd play football on Sundays and then they'd want you to play rugby on Saturdays and you'd just be mashed up come Sunday.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I always tried to get out of it.
Oh, okay.
Much to my teacher's dismay.
Okay, so you found football just outside of school.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, nice. All right, so you've said that you enjoyed the school experience. You've done very well at GCSE and then you find yourselves in a state sixth form, you said. Okay, and what did you study?
So I did philosophy and ethics, history, biology and maths. So my B at GCSE was in biology, but it was one of my favourite subjects. So I was hoping to correct it at A level, but yeah, that didn't happen.
Okay, and I suppose at this stage, like the subjects that you're choosing, were they with what you wanted to do at university in mind, or did you just choose them because you enjoyed them?
So actually, when I went to the state sixth form, I'd initially intended to do PE at A level, and I got there.
Banging subject, by the way. I did it.
So yeah, I unfortunately didn't get to, but when I got there, they were like, you should maybe consider doing biology instead, and I kind of just went with the teacher's recommendation.
So did you only do three?
No, so I did four AS and then three A level.
Okay, so philosophy and ethics, biology, maths and...
History,
sorry. Yeah. History banging as well.
Yeah, yeah, so I really enjoyed all of those subjects. But as I went through, I think I started to realise that the kind of qualitative stuff, more the kind of humanities, were what I was better at. So that's kind of like led to then what I went to do after uni.
Okay, cool. And you said that you saw the contrast between, what was your state school called, by the way?
Chingford Sixth Form Centre.
Chingford Sixth Form. Hold tight, Chingford, come on. And yeah, so what were kind of some of the differences that you noticed? It must have been a baptism of fire. Like, did people look at you like, oh my God, this is a guy from Bancroft?
You'd have to ask them.
Okay.
I think you said it to me the other day, like, I kind of knew what I wanted to do and where I wanted to get to, so I was focused on just kind of getting to uni.
Yeah, okay.
To be honest, I've actually probably got more close friends. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I've got some close friends from sixth form.
Okay.
I'm still very close with.
Okay.
But... there were probably things that happened at sixth form that wouldn't have happened at the other school.
Okay.
And again, it was a really good experience. I think some of the stuff that I assumed was normal, like some of the house parties and that we were going to for our 16ths and stuff, it just wasn't ordinary. And kind of getting a perspective on that from the outside looking in, I think was really helpful for me to then recognise, look, my parents have worked there themselves to the bone to put me through this and give me the best opportunity. I need to maximize that, and I think that's what we'll come on to, what gave me a bit more purpose in terms of a plan going forwards.
Okay, we like that. And at sixth form then, obviously they didn't specialize in rugby, I'm assuming.
No.
So you were able to focus on football properly?
So I played more football, and actually partway through, so I think in my second year, I was actually falling out of love with playing it more seriously.
Okay. So you wanted to play it seriously?
I thought so up until that point.
Okay.
But obviously 16 is a big cut off where people get their scholarships. It didn't happen for me. And I think playing at sixth form, and then I was playing in a club which did take it very seriously, but I just wasn't enjoying the experience as much. And fortunately for me, my parents are the kind who would say, look, they took me to football every week, and wanted, if that's what I wanted to do, they supported me on that. But as soon as I said, you know what, I'm not entirely sure this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And my dad asked, I said, well, law looks good. They kind of fully supported me with that. So they kind of helped make that decision easier. They weren't like saying, oh, you've said you wanted to do this, you need to do this. They said, okay, well, let's get to work on becoming a lawyer then.
Okay, so what age would you say that happened, that
conversation? Between 17 and 18.
Between 17 and 18, and had you already like sent off your UCAS and tried to apply to university?
No. So this was all, I remember it quite distinctly because this was all pre-UCAS, and what I did, again, this was fortunate because I'd been to the school I'd been to, some friends of mine's parents knew lawyers, so I just got busy saying, look, do you know anyone that I can go and do some work experience with? I'm thinking of going into law at university. I think it would make sense for me to do some work experience prior to submitting my personal statement. So one of my friends fortunately sorted me out, Jake Taylor.
Shout out Jake Taylor.
Yeah, I owe that guy. I wish him a happy birthday every year because we're not as close now, but he's made a big difference to my life.
Yeah.
Did work experience, was able to talk about that in my UCAS, and then, sent off my application.
Did you get paid?
No, I'm paid. Okay, just...
How when you say work experience, so just for people that, you know, might be going through something similar, like how much time did you dedicate to that?
So it was during the November... October half term.
Okay, so just a week.
Yeah, just like,
okay,
5 days.
Okay, but it's enough though.
Exactly.
Yeah. 4 days.
This is it. Yeah, 4 days. And I was working as I was like bussing tables at a restaurant before that, like cleaning them up after everyone was done with them. So I had a bit of money from that to pay for
sustain
me coming
you
out of London. Yeah.
And what would be your advice to anybody who wants to do that? Like, did you wear a suit? Did you come in scruffy on the first day? Like.
I think Oscar Wilde says you can never be overdressed or overeducated.
Shout out Oscar Wilde.
I certainly adopted that approach. And like, where my parents weren't strict in terms of what we wanted to do, if I'd like said I'm off to work experience now and I wasn't dressed properly, they would have told me. So I had that as an appropriate stopgap. But yeah, shirt, tie, suit.
All the bells and whistles.
And some of the shirts were questionable, as they may still be today.
Something's never changed. No, I'm joking. Looks good. So that kind of 5 days that you did that stand you instead for anything later down the line? Like, did you go back to...
It certainly did. So I didn't go back to that one, mm-hmm. although I kept in touch with them. But the friend's father who'd sorted me out that work experience had good like feedback, and then he put me in touch with other people and it kind of snowballed a bit because each time I went there I just tried to make myself useful, made tea. That's one thing I would say.
Know how to make a good cuppa.
you learn quickly and never turn that down. If someone says, oh, can you tea two sugars, you do it, because like ultimately you're not doing them a favor by being there.
Yeah.
What they're doing for you will mean that in a couple of years' time, you're better placed than other candidates to secure the jobs you want.
And this is just a question from me. So obviously, like you said, you're making teas. So where does the learning come in? Is it just like soaking in the atmosphere, or are they actually giving you like some menial tasks where, oh, okay, this is what we do here and that?
No. So certainly are soaking in the atmosphere. And I think that was a big part of it. I was like, okay, this is somewhere I can see myself working. Or at least in the environment I can see myself working in. But then you go along to client meetings, you ask questions. That's another thing I would definitely advise anyone going into work experience. Ask as many questions as possible, obviously without being annoying, but...
Notepad?
Take a notepad, take notes. Show you're engaged. Like, there's a difference between sitting and listening to someone and showing that you're actively listening. Mm-hmm. And people respond well to that. Like, ultimately, a lot of the people who are in positions that you want to be in are quite, they enjoy explaining their journey and they're flattered by it, I would say. So definitely it's important to like make sure you make the most of that. I was given say like practice notes to read of the like different things I was looking at. It was construction and energy law at the time, so I was told to like kind of read into it ahead of meetings. So it was kind of atmospheric learning, but then also hard learning in terms of
eye opening. And this is just a random one as well, because I know that some people might want to cut corners, but for those, let's say it was a 9 to 5, I don't know, are you shadowing your friend's dad?
No. So it's a friend, a contact of my friend's dad. Yeah.
But you're shadowing the contact to you, or did they assign you to someone else?
In that place, it was actually lots of different lawyers that I had to go and a lawyer would have a meeting and they'd just bring me along.
Okay.
But I would make sure, if I wasn't, I would make sure I introduced myself to people at least on the floor so they knew I was there, and then just say, look, if there's anywhere I can help, let me know, I'm here.
That's great, week. And so in terms of like the working day, was it 9 to 5, 9 to 6, or was you like trying to stay there until the last person?
No. It was, unless there was something to do, I would be there 9 to 6. And I would distinguish between work experience and say an internship or a VAC scheme, which you have to apply to get onto. When you're at university, where that might be required, where you are doing more work. But because this was kind of quite casual work experience, I did the work and made the teas for people.
I hear that.
Just soaked it all in, really.
I love that. So that leads us nicely into university, right? So you've kind of touched on, you know, what you do. You've ended up deciding to do law.
Yeah.
How does that decision come about?
So so I loved philosophy, and I think I'm realizing it more now as I get older. I've almost got like an untapped.
I mean, you've already quoted Oscar Wilde. We can see the philosopher in you already.
During my A levels, I would always go home, and then I'd have all these like long conversations with my dad about certain concepts that I'd learned. Like, it wasn't just a matter of I've read this and I leave it there. Like, it was a genuine interest and passion of mine.
Mm.
But I found it frustrating that there were always more questions than answers.
Yeah,
and realized that studying law might give me a bit more satisfaction out of, okay, you apply your analytical skills, you write, you reason, and you reach a conclusion, which can be tested. So I was considering doing philosophy and then doing a conversion course, but I spoke to one of the lawyers that I had met at that point, and they said, look, if you want to become a lawyer, it saves you a year to just go straight through, so you might as well do it. And yeah, on that basis, I decided to go to uni and just study law.
Okay, so up to this point, you know, spoken to various people, what's the university application process like for you? Do you know where you want to go?
Yeah, so I'd been to a few open days, which I'd recommend, because I think you can tell if you can see yourself in a place. And then, yeah, from people that had been before me, speaking to like friends, family, teachers, I kind of distilled it to universities. Didn't get all of the ones I necessarily wanted, but I'm of the view things happen for a reason, and I Southampton offered me, they were my first choice, and got the offer and
nice.
Yeah, got the result.
Do you mind disclosing how well you did in your A levels?
I got two A's and a B.
Oh, mate.
That's great. Yeah, the B was in maths, but it got me to the university. So
that's all that matters. Look, it sounds like it paid you to this day.
No, because I was happy with those results.
Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah, two A's and a B, lovely. Like you said, you've gone into law, you've chosen Southampton. So we arrive at Southampton now.
I meet you.
You do meet me pretty straight away, actually. But talk to me about, the first few weeks there, the first year. How did you find it, moving away from home and stuff?
Yeah, so fortunately, my sister had been to uni. So she was quite good at guiding me in terms of what to expect. And she was one that actually said, make sure you, try and get into a sports team or something,
because that'll
transform your experience. And I was so chilled out when I got to uni. I didn't even sort accommodation, so I ended up in
private rented.
Yeah, similar to you.
Yeah.
Which was a good experience. It was right next to campus, but I definitely think if you are a sociable person and want to meet people, maybe halls are a better.
Be prepared is what you're saying. Yeah, because I wasn't prepared either, and I ended up in private rented. But yeah.
So I get there and I was just a bit like, I don't know, 18-year-old me is a bit of a waste, man. my parents were like, are you going or what? My best friend came in the car and we packed the car to go. And they're like, you never would have gone otherwise unless Matt was there.
Yeah.
So, I get there and it's good, going out a lot. But then I remember they had the football trials during Freshers Week.
Always. Absolute nightmare.
Which was killer. But, fortunately got through that. And I missed the first big social because it was my birthday that weekend, but came to the next one for initiation, and I feel like uni started.
Uni definitely starts, won't you?
So yeah, I first year obviously learning to cook, do your own washing,
life skills, isn't it?
Yeah,
it really is life skills.
Funny, I was talking to a student yesterday because I mentored through the Amos bursary, and he's applying to where he's got his offers now, so. He was like, what should I expect? And I was like, it's all the things you don't think about, like the cooking, cleaning your room, that stuff that needs to be done even when you have loads of work on and no one else is going to do it for you. So, all of that stuff is a bit of a...
Did you get on with the people who you lived with?
Yeah. They got on fine. They weren't people, I made more friends with my course mates than people through football.
Yeah.
But I got on well.
The reason I say that is because, I've been similar to you, got on with them. But in my second year, I knew I wasn't going to stay with them, but they weren't people who you ended up staying with.
No, they weren't. So I ended up staying up with some people from my course.
Okay, so for people who are aspiring to do a law degree, Like, obviously there's a lot of fun, there's a lot of partying going on in Southampton. I know that from first-hand experience. Like, how is law in your first year? Like, how are you finding it? Are you still enjoying it? Is it still like, yeah, this is what I want to do?
Speaking candidly, it was tough. I think, because I had no experience of it before. So there was that, there was moving cities, there was living by yourself, and then there was this whole new subject matter, which I probably should have done some like pre-reading into. Like, if I had my mind today, that then that's what I would have done just to prepare myself. But it was very alien, and the people on the course were, I thought, like very exceptional. Like, in terms, they were like kind of top performing in their schools. So it was an intense environment, and juggling that with a social life with sport was challenging. Yeah. But what was good, and in terms of a plan, they made it quite clear to us that in first year, although lots of people think you just need to pass, get your 40%, I think it is, and then go through. If you want to come on to internships in your second year, they're going to look at your first year grades.
Oh.
So that, of all the things I heard that year, that really resonated. I was like, okay, I need to make sure, bare minimum, I get a 2-1 if I'm serious about this. So I always had that as a kind of like, okay, I get 2-1 in my first year and I'm going to be applying to internships in my second year. And then the ball kind of started rolling from there a bit.
Okay, nice. And I was actually going to say that, like, all you need to do is pass in your first year. So a common misconception that needs, it's good that that got demystified. Was that like in your first week or?
It was in one of our lectures. And again, I think as much as it was a challenging 3 years, I'd say, it was good that it was so clear what you needed to do, depending upon where you wanted to get to, like the path was mapped out.
Yeah, and also for those who potentially want to do law at uni, am I right in thinking that, and I'm pretty sure I am, like at Southampton anyway, it was like you had to learn the whole syllabus over the whole year, and then it was a series of exams. So no like January exams, it was just all, it was like 6 exams, 3-hour exams in summer, and like, so you couldn't even cram, you just need to like learn and be on job constantly.
So I feel like I've almost like suppressed that memory. I was listening to your one with Ellie a few weeks ago, and when she was talking about those exams, I was like, oh yeah, I went through that. Like, and it was intense during uni because at the end of every year you'd be tested on all your modules. They were 3-hour papers, no textbooks or anything.
That's so mad.
And you have to memorize, like, or at least understand how all the cases fit together, because rather than get given a question, which is like elaborate, it will be, here's a problem scenario and you need to identify all the legal issues in it with reference to case law. So
it
is a big test of memory.
So you needed to be like, oh, in the case of 1952 Johnson versus Howard and this and that.
Yeah, the judge said X.
And then
bring it back. So it as tough as that was as an experience, and I'll drop another one. They say all growth happens outside the comfort zone, right? So like, it was a very uncomfortable 3 years, but in terms of how much like my analytical skills developed, like I think it was a fantastic experience from that perspective.
Okay, and yeah, to anybody who, you know, is here in 6 exams, 3 hours long, got to do the whole syllabus, what was your process for kind of learning things?
Again, racking my brains here, but one thing I would say is you can also do like a non-law degree and then the conversion after, which is what Ellie did, which might be the preferable option. But I basically had like mind maps stuck up all around my bedroom and would do voice notes, speaking them out to myself.
Okay.
So that like I could almost hear myself recounting the cases and what went on, so that it was like there in my mind today.
This is why he's not wearing his headphones today, because he's been traumatized from that experience, people. Just FYI.
So no, yeah, there was a bit of a process, and it was a really insane period, because like even to get to the point where you have like A3 sheets per like unit within each module, which you can then look at, refer to, so you're essentially memorizing in the hope that you're well prepared. You obviously do practice papers and stuff, but that was very much my process. I'm not saying it's the perfect process.
Yeah, no, but it's just good for people to hear it, right? But it seems like it served you well. So continuing into your second year then, right? Yeah, talk to me. So you said that...
We're going to skip over Salute.
Was that your first year?
Yeah, that was my first year.
I mean, we could talk about Salute.
The birth of Yaki McInnes.
I mean, yeah, so as Alex has mentioned, we went to university together, and yeah, Salou, what can we say about it? We just love tour. It was a boys' holiday. University of Southampton football team, shout them out. How many of us? Like 30 of us? 30 yeah. boys went to Salou?
On a bus.
On the what? and we do what boys do for 3 or 4 days. Can't get into too much detail about that because we're focused on, you know, the big things. We can save that for a special.
You, though. I was going to say, like,
they
it's
are
not
character
all work,
building, aren't they? Yeah. It's definitely not all work. And the fact that, you know, you're juggling your degree and going on a holiday like this, like, you probably needed 1 or 2 weeks to recover from the holiday. But yeah, those are the kind of trips where you really, I don't know, you just let loose. And I think you need those kind of experiences.
I would also say you probably develop quite close bonds with people because, yeah. Like, yeah, you're working, going out, but actually getting that prolonged period of time together as a group, like, we are all still kind of quite good mates, and if you see each other, like, it's like an immediate network. So from a support perspective as well, like, while you're at uni. So yeah, the reason I wanted to mention that is because football was also a big part of my uni experience.
It was the probably significant thing. Like, I was at a birthday thing over the weekend, and I was basically explaining how getting onto the university football team, it helped to shape my experience. And not because I needed to get onto it, but to your point, I like went to Southampton late, didn't know anybody when I went there, and it's almost like all right, I need this because I need to socialise and meet people. And like, if I didn't get onto the uni football team, even though I did end up making like loads of other friends, you're almost like, fuck, how do I meet people? Mm. And it's like, it puts pressure, but getting onto that team, it took away all the pressure early doors, because there was like 40, 50 guys who were like your brothers from day one. And you always knew that you had them, to your point, like, regardless of whether, you know, you fall out with a flatmate or you fall out with a course mate, you know what I mean? You always had them. Not saying that you should fall out of people, but yeah.
No, so yeah, moving on to second year, before that, I went to a City Law for Ethnic Minorities event. Which one of my professors came up to me and a couple of others and said, look, you should look at this. And I went there, and it basically meant that we went around different law firms doing negotiation exercises, presentation skills, like workshops and stuff, but meeting people from the different organisations. And yeah, from that, I was like, okay, I could really see myself doing this now, like, with more experience. And I mentioned before, although I didn't do work experience again at the same place after that event, I reached out to my friend's dad again and said, look, is there anyone else you know? And then kind of through the people that they knew, because lawyers know lawyers, right? They could then put me in touch with other people. So throughout my first year summer, I worked at maybe 3 or 4 different law firms.
Oh, did you? Wow. Yeah.
Chambers, Barristers Chambers, and then also a stockbroking company, which one of my friends works at. So I got really busy, because someone said to me in that first year, if you get your 2-1, if you're on a sports team, and I was treasurer of the football team as well, so you got a position of responsibility, sports team, and work experience, and your 2-1, like, that's going to give you the best opportunity when it comes to applying in your second year for vacation schemes, which are the best opportunity of getting a training contract offer at the end. So. Yeah, it wasn't the most fun first year summer.
But it's methodical, it was, right?
Yeah, and I had to, like, work at pubs on the weekend to pay again to go into London and that. But again, putting that work in then, I think, made things a lot easier going forward. So I'm glad I did it. And yeah, it made a massive difference.
Yeah, I think it's, like, good to hear this train of thought, because sometimes, I mean, I've said it on this podcast before, I think people look at people who end up being quite successful and they think that, like, the success happened overnight. You know, we're not even talking about, you know, you've been successful. I mean, I know that you are, but look at where it started from. It started from you as an 18-year-old guy. I mean, it actually started from way before that, doing your GCSEs, prepping, but you've gotten to university. And I know what I was doing in first year summer. It was not any kind of work experience. And, you know, just hearing this, it really, like, sometimes people, like, you apply for jobs and, you know, don't get me wrong, people are 80 applications, 100 applications, and sometimes people are wondering why they don't necessarily get put through for things. It's because they're coming up against people like you. And I'm not saying that in the, oh my God, Alex is so smart. It's like, Alex has all these things on his resume and he's actually put in the work. And sometimes it is a case of maybe there are people that are just better than you who, or not better than you, but
at that particular moment in time, that, better prepared than you were.
Better prepared is the word, yeah. And sometimes people need to understand that, right? How can you prepare yourself to give yourself the best opportunity, like you said? And I think you've done it quite well.
And just on that, so a few years before this, I remember one of my friend's parents, who's quite senior at a bank, said to us that before going to university, what we need to realise is that for every one of us, there's like maybe at least 100 coming from outside of the UK who are trilingual,
wow,
who are getting extra A stars.
Yeah.
So like, you need to be competitive early. Mm. If and again, it might be too intense to hear at 18 and stuff, but like, I had that at the front of my mind in terms of it's not going to be like just given to me at the end of it. And I wanted to be quite intentional about how I spent my time in the lead up to trying to get to where I wanted to get to.
Yeah, I think being intentional, I mean, this is what I'm doing this year. This is the year of intention. But I think being intentional is, you might not see a change straight away, right? But I was listening to your boy, Jordan Peterson, and what he says, sorry, but you know what I mean though. You enjoy like reading his books and stuff. And he says that micro improvements lead to rapid, like long-term growth. I'm like, bro, that's so true. And you'd get there by being intentional, so by doing little things every day or every week or every month.
Yeah, I fully kind of buy into that. I think, I don't know, looking back, and I can describe what happened so clearly because I had like the view of where I wanted to get to, and most of it like has been achieved, fortunately, and I'm super grateful for that. But I kind of now question myself of, okay, well, I was super intentional then. I didn't know half as much as I know now. So what am I thinking about going forward? It's not to say anything's guaranteed. Part of it for me as well is my dad always said to me, you can be a wandering generality or a defined specific. And I know when I don't know where I'm going. So I've had it a few times in terms of, okay, well, I got my training contract. Now what? I've qualified as a lawyer. Now what? And it affects like how I'm feeling because I don't know what my next goal or aim is. So I'm definitely that way inclined. Not everyone is and not everyone has to be, but I know for my own kind of...
You want to be defined specific?
I try to be. Okay, I try to be because without getting too deep and stuff, like without knowing where I'm going, and I can only speak from my own personal perspective, then like, I don't know.
You need purpose, right?
Yeah, and it's hard to
get up. I get that.
For instance, this morning, get up. I know I'm going to the gym. It's easier to drag myself out of bed at a certain time than if I get up. And I want to get up for a certain time, but I have nothing to do. So it's like, I know I need to almost have those things outside, which I've like almost, and this is back to the kind of New Year's resolutions and stuff, like good opportunity to break down what you want to achieve this year by writing down and saying, this is what, after a lot of deep thought, I would like to do. In 10 days time, when you try and do something else and you look back at that list, you've almost got this contract with yourself, which you might kind of breach, but at least you've tried to be intentional about where you want to get to, and you've set something up outside of how you're feeling in the present moment to guide you. Yeah. Some would say we used to have religion for that, but I don't know. Like, I think for me, it makes sense to be quite specific in terms of where I want to get to.
Yeah, I hear you. Where are we? So we're in second year.
Second year, yeah.
You've secured the...
Got a vacation scheme end of that year.
Okay.
And
when did you have to apply for that as well?
Start of second year.
So you apply for it right at the start. Is it like a lot of interviews and stuff?
Yeah, so I think there was like online application, phone interview, then there's also some like online tests.
And are you getting help from like your friend's dad?
No. This is because the kind of verbal reasoning
you can't. But yeah. I'm talking about like sometimes, you know, they might want like a cover letter or something, or like a mission statement or something like that. I don't know.
Like, not really, to be honest. And like I might like, I got my like mum to look at it and she would say if anything was like there were typos or anything. But it was more, yeah, I had to kind of try and make it as best as I could, get other people's opinions, but ultimately, like an essay, you have to submit it yourself, right?
Okay.
And it's a representation of you.
Okay. And I mean, we've got the gist of how uni was. Second year. How was that training?
Yeah, so that was really good. So, and again, it was like, a culmination of the steps I'd taken before. So it was almost like verification of the fact that, okay, yeah, this is where you wanted to get to. I went and spent 3 weeks at the law firm I eventually went to on something called a vacation scheme. It's basically an internship. And what they do is put you in two different teams. They have lots of social events. Now, I don't know if they're as in person as often, but some really good social events in the evening. And you just, yeah, get to know the people at the firm. And at the end of it, you have an interview for your training contract.
Yeah.
And then before your third year.
Basically, it was like on the premise that you have a 2-1, have a job, and you had that sorted a year before, and like you'd negotiated your contracts, you knew how much you was going to be earning.
You didn't negotiate anything; they told you.
They tell you.
Yeah, but
you've got something to aim towards. Once again, you've got that direction, right? If I get this, I will be on this, and I will start my working life.
Exactly.
And third year, talk to me. Did you enjoy your third year? Was it super stressful with that weighing down?
Probably
on
a bit
you?
More stressful, you know. But I think third year probably always is for people.
Still socialing? Cause
still socializing, perfect. Definitely. My now fiance, let's say. But she lived, she'd left at that point because she was your year. So I was traveling a lot to see her. I was also socializing in Southampton. And then I was, trying to ensure that I got the grades. Got through third year. Then you have to do an LPC after. One thing I should also say is when you get the training contract offer prior to doing law school, like your LPC after, the law firms offer, they say that they'll cover your course fees, which can be like up to £15,000 now.
Jeez.
Plus they give you a grant for that year to live off of.
So, oh, that's fantastic.
Again, it's quite nice to know, okay, if you want to become a lawyer, you know that the kind of financial side of it is heavily subsidized, if not fully covered.
So they comp that all for you, and the LPC is 1 year?
LPC is 1 year.
And where do you do that?
College of Law, Moorgate.
Okay.
For people that don't do the LPC, so if you haven't done the law degree, you do the GDL. So that's what Ellie did. So it was like 1 year GDL, 1 year LPC. But again, I think in her case, where she'd secured the training contract before,
they
paid for all of it. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So if you can, guys, try and get ahead and get that paid for you, because you save a lot of money, right? And are you working during this time, or is it just full-time education?
So actually, it's January to July of the year after uni. So you graduate in July, right?
So you've got 6 months off.
6 months off, but I worked for those 6 months at one of the people I'd met beforehand. It was an insolvency practitioners. So it was kind of like a quasi-legal investigations role.
Sounds interesting.
It was really interesting, and it was good to get used to being in an office and working full time. The experience was really, really invaluable.
Nice. And then you do your LPC. Yeah. And is that like distinction, merit, all of that now? It's not like 2-1s and whatever.
Yeah, so
you just have to pass, right?
Got to pass for your training contract offer, and then you start the 2 years training.
So just to bring us up to speed, so we've been to university, smashed it, enjoyed life. You've done 6 months work experience. Was this paid?
Yeah.
Okay, we like to hear that. And then we've done the LPC. And now we're getting into the 2 years. So are they the two? So obviously they pay for you to do the LPC. The training contract is 2 years. Do you have to stay any longer than that because they've paid for the LPC and stuff like that?
The 2 years is all you have to do.
The 2 years is all you have to do. Okay.
And you do 4 6-month rotations.
Oh, that sounds good.
So you get to work in different areas of the firm and decide you try and get into the area that most suits you.
How many areas are there to choose from?
There's probably over 10.
Oh my God. So how did you whittle down the 4 that you wanted to try and get on?
So you on the LPC, you do different modules and you get an insight into what each area will be like. And also on your law degree, you could do
say what does LPC stand for?
Legal practice course.
Yeah, okay, I knew that. Okay.
On your law degree as well, you do other areas. I would always try and speak to people who had done those seats to get a sense of what it would be like. Do you want me to tell you which ones?
Please.
So I did one in structured finance, one in corporate general, structured finance, you're helping establish lending platforms through quite complex structures. Okay. Corporate, you're buying and selling, helping private equity companies or companies buy and sell other companies.
Yep.
I then went into competition and trade, which we were competition, which was the area I mostly focused on. They advise companies in the context of anti-competitive behaviour. So
I get that.
If you and I
could Monopoly and stuff
exactly,
like that.
Yeah,
look at me, I could have done that.
Done it.
No, I'm joking.
And then also in the context of if, say, I'm buying your company and we hit certain financial thresholds around the world with our global turnover or assets, we have to make filings on behalf of those companies to basically say that the transaction won't lead to anti-competitive effects.
Okay.
Which requires you to drill down into the detail of what those companies actually
this
do
and so
where their products overlap, and then write a notification to show that it's not going to lead to anti-competitive effects. So it's quite like abstract.
Okay, I hear that. All right, so here's a question that I've asked to other people on the pod. So obviously you've gone to university, you studied law, you've done everything that we're talking about. Did what you studied prepare you for your job and the LPC? So you were like, oh, okay. Like you weren't, you didn't go in like to the training contract and like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here. You were like, oh, I'm prepared. Damn, law school, everything. Well done. Good job, lecturers.
So it does. But I think one of the things that I'm sure will come out as a theme for these sorts of conversations is that there's levels, right?
Yeah.
So you could be top student in your year. Wherever you get to, you're going to be in an environment where there were hundreds of top students in their year. Plus, there are people with more experience than you. So you might do a first draft of a notification, for instance, but whoever's reading it may maybe seen 100 of them, and they're going to know, actually, we should maybe frame it in this way, or that regulator's not going to like how we've put it there, or... Yeah, there are skills which are transferable, but you can't just go walk in and know how to do the job.
Yeah,
of it is learned on the job.
Okay, but you got to start, right? Like even though it gets tweaked. And then, okay, so the 2 years, how do we find them? Are you enjoying it? What are the hours like?
Yeah, so hours in the first seat were probably more, I think as like naturally you're trying to like get up to speed with everything. And they gave us a lot of responsibility, so that was probably longer hours.
That's good though, right?
It was good. And like I was younger at the time, so you have a lot more energy, I suppose. But yeah, so hours were tough in the first seat, but really enjoyed the work, really nice team. Second seat, it was where I thought I wanted to qualify, but wasn't necessarily for me when I got there. But third seat, which competition I hadn't really had much of an idea about, but learned a bit more about, spoke to people in the team, realized in that team you could also do like anti-bribery work, so it seemed interesting. That team, which is the team I qualified into, was just fascinating work and a really, really cool team to be a part of.
How big is the team?
It's like 40 people.
Okay.
I think 7 or 8 partners, give or take. But yeah, just loads to learn. Like you could just be doing 2 completely different pieces of work each day.
Sorry if this is like an airheaded comment. You can tell me. But obviously, I'm sure that a few listeners would have watched Suits. Like you look at the bullpen, right, with all like the associates or whatever, and they're all working. Is that what a law firm's like, or like have they captured it well, or no?
I used to watch Suits when at uni, but I stopped once I started working.
Oh, goodness. But, okay, that's fair. That's understandable.
I think...
Does everyone suited and booted? Laptops? Or like just rows and rows?
No. So like we had like a shared office with our supervisor, which they've started to change now because they want to like make more of the office space and stuff. Every law firm's different. The trainee population that I was part of, like everyone was quite supportive of one another. It didn't feel too like...
That sounds stabbing. Good.
Yeah, it was good. And yeah, it's actually quite... Looking back on it, it's probably your most fun time at the firm because from the firm's experience and perspective, they want to put as much money into you at that stage because they see it as a long-term investment, right? The more people you know, the more comfortable you are in the firm, the more years you can give them because you're in a fee-earning capacity once you qualify and you're hopefully going to be a partner one day bringing in business for them. So we had like trainees Christmas party, trainee summer party, and we were able to go on VAT scheme events like to kind of sell the firm to students. So like,
oh wow,
as much as it was hard work, it was very much work hard.
And like
hard.
Were you always putting yourself forward for things like that?
Yeah. And also football.
So, I was actually just gonna say that. So like you did like a tournament in Spain or whatever.
Yeah, I even forgot about that. But they have an 11-a-side, well they had an 11-a-side football team which played in the London Legal League, which I played in. That was every week. Again, a great way to meet people across the firm outside of your department. And then once a year, they haven't done it because of COVID, they would have what was known as like a fluency cup. So your office would play against like other offices in the law firm.
This sounds so sick.
So it was in my second week, I was in Berlin playing in a...
That's so sick.
It was Yeah, amazing. And I'd say
you can make yourself a hero without actually having done any work. It was
not far off, like as in you because you naturally meet people, you get to know them on a personal level.
Yeah.
You go out with them because they put on social events at those events as well. So,
With regards to that time management and stuff, then like I'm assuming that you know a law career is quite time consuming. Like, did you find yourself having to put off football because I had this deadline or that deadline, or did you just manage your time well to make sure that you were always available for football and others as well? What did you see the theme as being?
So I captained the team when I was in my third seat and got like to see it from the other side, but everyone's busy, right? And it's almost like a captain's job to make sure that you message every individual person being like, you're coming tonight, right? Because you put the team list out, people think, oh, there's 15 people coming, I've got this to do and I don't want to like have to come back to work after, I'm going to sack it off, and then you have 6 or 7 people do that and then suddenly you're on less than 11. So I always tried to make sure I went. I thought it was one of the best things about being at the firm, and fortunately for me, my supervisors valued it. They like to hear about like how they'd be like, how do you get on and stuff. And I think because I made it clear that I used to play quite a lot at uni and before that, like they would never really get in the way of it. Like maybe on one or two occasions if there was something absolutely urgent, but more often than not, when you're talking about between the hours of 8 to like 10, if there is something that needs doing the next day, you just come back and do it, right? Which not everyone wants to do, but like the supervisor says,
you know the means to the end. So you're a trainee, you do 2 years, and then am I right in thinking you become an associate?
But during those 2 years, I should say, in my final seat after competition and trade, I did 3 months in dispute litigation, disputes and resolution, and then I got to go to Hong Kong for 3 months with my team that I qualified into, and that was an amazing experience.
Did you learn any of the language?
I did not.
Okay, that's fine. But, did everyone talk English?
Yeah, which was unhelpful, I guess. But I should have been better.
Oh man, Hong Kong's. So, what do you recommend it then? This is a bit of a travel podcast.
I
need to go and pod on it.
Some of my amazing time. And
how do they like? Is there a lot of black people there? If you don't mind me asking,
there weren't many. No, there weren't.
Were they looking at you like some foreign fruit, or how was it?
It's weird because I was in the like corporate world. I suppose. Like that was a bit more cosmopolitan. So not so much, but. Honestly, like I'd say they were some of the most like you gotta go there, man, because it's a very different kind of place to the UK. I'd say when I was there at least it was a lot more liberal, like in the circles I was hanging out in. It was really good fun, and then outside the really busy city, which is what a lot of people hear about, you've got like some of the most beautiful hikes in the world. So like you could spend £10 on your weekend, but you've been to like amazing waterfalls.
Is it quite cheap?
Yeah, just in terms of traveling around, but like you can have like very cheap days because there's so much like landscape and stuff to see.
Do you think you could have done longer than 3 months?
Hong Kong was expensive.
I remember
because they gave us a slight pay rise to go there, and I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna be in the money. I'll save lots when I get there. And by the final week, I had so being there meant that I could go to like other parts of Southeast Asia, and I had like a bit of money left. I was like, I can either get a really nice suit or I can go to Thailand.
And you went to
Thailand.
Smart man.
But then when I got back, I was like, I need to get back to the UK just to start saving money. It's so expensive.
Okay. So this is a word of warning, people. If you do go to Hong Kong, you have a great time, but it's quite expensive.
Beers were like 12 quid.
Oh my God. Good job I don't like beer, but cocktails must have been like 20. Mm. But we'll save this for another episode. Okay, so trainee. Associate.
Yeah.
So before we talk about what you did as an associate, like talk to me about the trajectory of like your typical law person. So you've got trainee, you've got associate. What are the next few steps?
And then senior associate.
Okay.
So after 5 or so years. Okay. And then you've got, typically you can go straight to partner from there. So you might be a senior associate for another 5 years.
Mm.
But some people go to like off counsel, in my law firm at least, and then partner, but then there's different levels of partners. So you might have just a salaried partner, and then you have like a junior equity, senior equity, and then you've got management positions as well. So like managing partner, that's like Jessica Pearson.
Yeah, jeez.
So yeah, there's lots of levels. And then even globally as well, there's like a global executive committee, and there's regional committees, there's like department and practice group heads. So there's lots of leadership positions.
Okay, this is really good to know. And is it clearly defined then? Because you've said, obviously you've got 2 years training, associate, like you said, 5 years. It's like, if I bang, 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 or is it like people are fighting for the same role? Or is it just like everybody can get there as long as they're hitting their goal?
Yeah, I think it is clearly defined. The way it becomes competitive is that there's only so much work to go around, and there's different quality of work, right? Okay. My team was quite good for not being, like, it didn't ever feel like people were stepping on each other, but yes. I'm just getting to that senior associate level, so I don't know if that changes at all when people start thinking about partnership a bit more. But as we might come on to in this episode or another one perhaps, I'm actually about to go for a career change, so I won't necessarily know that immediately.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about associates. You did that for 5 years.
I've done it for 4 years.
You've done it for 4 years, yeah. And what's the change in between being a trainee and being an associate? Is it now you specialise in one of the seats?
Yes, so you specialise and you're only in one area.
Okay. No changing.
Okay. The buck essentially stops with you, and you're given as much responsibility as you can handle.
So how big is the team now?
It's still the 40-person they say you're at your most profitable at that level because you know you charge by the hour, right? Once you get to like mid-level associates, like after 2 or 3 years, you've done enough of that sort of work that you can start managing kind of projects, and you're not too expensive to put on things. So
they give you a lot of responsibility, yeah,
and that's the way you learn ultimately. It gets. I found at least like. Training contract was like really good, you worked hard but really good fun, but whereas it's like the realities of client demands and stuff like become more evident the senior you become naturally.
So do you feel like you were always on as an associate?
Yes, but I think you also manage it, like you always checking your phone to make sure that there's not something that's urgent that needs to be done, but it's almost incumbent upon you to say I've got this tonight and I'm going to be offline for these hours. And people are generally respectful of that.
Okay, good. But you just have to be organised enough to let people know.
Yeah,
or they'd expect that you're on.
Exactly. Yes and no. I think, so my firm have got definitely much better. Through the pandemic, there was a bit of a blurring of lines between work and home. But I think you can create a rope to hang yourself with, essentially, in terms of if you just try and take on as much work, which is what you want to do because you want to learn.
Impress and whatever.
You just drown in it ultimately. So you've got to like essentially be quite I suppose stern in your boundaries and then but make sure that you're delivering the work that's expected.
Okay. And obviously, so you know, you're doing associate for a significant period of time. Obviously I know you personally, and I know you've done some extracurriculars like giving back, like mentoring. Like what kind of brought that about? What did, like, and I suppose the question is phrased, you know, at uni you did the work experience because you knew it would land you the training contract. Now with some, like, we'll talk about some of the stuff that you do. Was it a means to an end? Is it because it's something that you know you've always wanted to do? Just kind of talk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think where I'd had like kind of like I said, my friends and his dad, like I can see the impact that what they decided to do at a given moment in time has changed the trajectory of my life. I at least feel like it would be really like almost disingenuous to myself to just be like, okay, that's me done now. Like every time I've kind of had a success in work, I've always kind of felt that I need to at least try and help one person on the way up, because you're learning new things every time and your perspective gets sharper, and you can say to people, look, if, especially like I have people reach out to me on LinkedIn and I always will message back to them and say like, if they're applying to say Baker McKenzie, I think where a lot of people will reach out and say, oh, I'm looking at applying, do you have any tips, and I'll respond as best as I can, like within reason.
Do you have a copy and paste?
There's different I find it quite, so actually the better way of putting it is work can be very stressful and very overwhelming. One thing they've actually started me doing is I do mentoring circles at work for the like kind of ethnic minority trainees, And that's an hour out of your day, and you're charging by the hour.
Every day?
Not an hour, oh, okay. Every day, but like once every, say, month at least. But there's always stuff to be doing on the work front. But I would always, knowing how it impacts me and others, prioritize that and say, look, I'm going to make that hour, or do my absolute best to make that hour, because it's very hard to go through that and then come out the other side and have a bad attitude. It's almost like a gratitude exercise, and you recognize what you've learned and how you can help others. So I do primarily do it to give back and to give people the advice that I wish I had when I was at their age. But also I recognize that it keeps me slightly honest in terms of not getting too carried away with any success that I get to enjoy. And yeah, realizing that, like I said at the start, there's been so much privilege that's been granted to me, and I should try and leverage it for other people as best as I can.
I like that. So you've talked about mentoring people. Do you have any mentees?
Yeah, so like I said, I've got some at work, like trainees, and then I've got...
sorry, maybe I phrased that wrong. Is anyone mentoring you?
Mentoring me.
I just say? Sorry.
So I, kind of, informally, in my firm certainly, like informally, and then we have like what's known as a coach, and the lady who I have...
Top draw, earns every penny. Do you watch Billions?
No.
Oh, man, because I feel like she would be the person at their firm. That's what she sounds like. Anyway.
I'll keep it like short, but yeah, she's a real inspiration, and has taken our like kind of relationship very seriously. And I think I've got so much to thank her for in terms of how much she's done for me. And I know it's not just in terms of the advice she gives me. I know she's supporting me when I'm not even there in terms of the opportunities and stuff that have come my way. And yeah, she's such a fantastic example of how to lead. Like if I am ever in a leadership position,
you can take a lot of things from.
I have no excuse in terms of getting slack on that, because I've seen how it's done properly. Like I read Jocko Willink.
I don't personally know.
He's a former US Marine, and he's got a book on leadership.
I think I've heard
he's been on
the
Joe Rogan podcast.
I've heard the name, yeah.
But I was like reading through it, and I was like, this is just that person. So she's got the blueprint, and yeah, I always just wish her well in terms of her career. And she gives back as well. And again, she does that. I can at least do the same.
Okay. So we've spoken about the associate, 4 years, you're doing some mentoring, you've got your mentors. You've let it slip earlier on the podcast that, you know, you're planning on doing a career change. What's kind of brought that on?
Yeah, so I had a really, and I've had a very interesting experience so far. We didn't talk about it, but I worked in Brussels as well just before the pandemic, which was a really good experience, and I was super grateful.
What brought on that?
So the type of law I was doing, we were doing a lot of work making notifications to the European Commission, and we've got an office in Brussels that really specialised on that work. So one of the partners like suggested I do it, and I thought, yeah, great.
How long were you there for? Or were you going because it's quite easy to get to?
I was meant to be there for 9 months, but then it got cut short because of the pandemic, so I was there for 6. Okay. But it was, yeah, a really good experience, and I was able to come back and forth quite a lot. So yeah, that was good. But I think, yeah, being as open as possible, what I do at the moment kind of leads to one of two destinations, realistically, in terms of if you just want to keep going with it. And I think during the pandemic, having extra time to really think about like what it is I do see myself like doing longer term, I wasn't sure that those destinations were exactly where I wanted to get to. So I started looking at opportunities where I could broaden my skill set, because the more it goes on, the more you're very specialized. Like there aren't that many competitions.
You can't pivot, really.
This is even unlike other organizations where you can say, okay, I'm going to try a bit of time in that team. You can't do that, like realistically in law. Like people change after qualification very rarely, so it was almost like competition law or bust. I on that basis looked elsewhere, and yeah, I looked at other opportunities, and one came up, which was quite a grueling experience interview wise, but got there in the end. And I'll
16 interviews, you said? Yeah. Something like that. Mad. We don't even need to talk about it, but that's mad. And what kind of industry, where are you moving
to
now?
Be in finance.
It's gonna be in finance. And are you excited about it?
I'm really looking forward to it, yeah. I think like I said, I got my offer from Baker McKenzie at the age of 20. I'm 29 now, so it's been a long, and even before that, one kind of small fact is in my personal statement for university, the first line from it was from a Baker McKenzie article.
Oh, was
that went down well in interviews, yeah, because I'd read a kind of common ground that they had, and yeah, something came up and I thought, actually, that's quite a good way to start it. So I'd had my eye on them from a very early point, like 18, so over 10 years, really. But so it's nothing to do with like kind of my experience there. It's just more an opportunity to broaden my skill set. And yeah, from what I've been told, and I'll know a lot more when I start, I'll have ample opportunity to use the skills I have got, but but grow them going forwards in a completely new environment.
So don't be offended when I say this, I have to start, but you're going to, will your BE maths, will that be tested in your finance role?
Potentially, man, potentially, probably.
But no, I'm joking, Had to ground him, you know, because he's such an exceller. What was the thing I wanted to ask? So yeah, you spoke earlier about being, and I know we're almost at time here, but you spoke about, what was it, decisive, general, so it was general something and decisive.
Wandering generality or defined specific.
Defined specific, okay. So you said that you like to have direction, right? Do you feel like when you start in this new role, you're going to be wandering again for a bit until you find what you want to do, and how do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, and absolutely. So Robert Greene has a book called Mastery, and he talks about the apprenticeship phase in anything you do. And I think, I can't remember who said it, but it's like the fool is like the precursor to the savior. You can't get good at anything until you start from a really bad position. So I know naturally it's going to be a new environment, new people, new things to learn and new ways of doing things. And I kind of embrace that because I know that I have to do that if I want to get good at it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have that attitude towards it, and kind of when I get there, I'll see what I think I need to do and ask questions about if I've got ambitions of going far here, what is it that I need to do? Hopefully without offending anyone, but giving me a clear perspective on the sorts of things I need to be aware of to perform in that environment.
Okay. Great answer. I mean, they've all been great answers. This has been a really insightful podcast. Maybe this has been the most philosophical podcast I've definitely done to this point. I suppose we're going to round it up with just a few final comments. I suppose to anyone listening to this, whether they want to do law, whatever they want to do at university, just to generally, I don't know, be more intentional, I suppose, in their lifestyle and in what they want to do. What advice would you give them? So such a broad question, I know, sorry.
I think I said it to you the other day in terms of like, at least I try and keep things very simple in my mind. It's like my guiding philosophies in terms of all I do. And the thing that came to mind the other day was that in life, you're always making the decision as to like whether you're willing to sacrifice your present or your future. And we have to deal with the pain of regret or the pain of the process of progressing. So I always try and look at it in those terms. Like if I don't get up and do what I want to do, for instance, very small example, gym, I've got holidays this year, I want to look good.
I can't, that's the long term.
Yeah, so I can't, if I honestly
can't neglect the short term,
this is it. And I have to overcome my kind of present of wanting to snooze the alarm to get up, go and do it so that I can enjoy the rewards of it on a very simple level.
So it might be simple, but I feel like speaking to you, like just being able to do that, I don't think many people can, and sometimes I include myself in that, because there are things that sometimes I know I need to do and I've gotten better at it, you know, speaking to you and speaking to others, but sometimes I am just so lazy. But it's a good way to, I'm not being hard on myself,
I would
but,
say yeah.
everyone goes through it.
I'm also, I think I try and be kind to myself in that I'm not going to get it right every time. Like we spoke about like kind of plans for the year and that making them ambitious. And I really hope like you have a plan and you know what you want to do this year. And recognizing that as ordered as you want to be in terms of the approach to your year, there's things you can't control. So I embrace the chaos of any outcome. And that might be like going through that process that they might have said, you know what, we're not going to give you a job. Fine. Keep it moving. Cause that's what life's all about. And, yeah, you can try and be as intentional as possible, but recognize that you will have off days, and that's also fine. And not trying to give yourself too hard a time, because you can send yourself crazy just thinking I've got to achieve every day. Like it's not about that at all, and it kind of balances you out to say, okay, today wasn't the best, or I meant to do this today, didn't get to do it. Fine, what can I do tomorrow to rectify it? So it's just trying to kind of have that relationship with yourself without getting too philosophical.
I'm a student in this lesson today.
We all are.
And you know, I didn't even do this at the start because I was just so eager to get into it. But as you know, what we like to do on the Vibe and Tribe podcast, we like to talk about travel. And when you go away, you know, you've mentioned you've been to Hong Kong, here, there and everywhere, Brussels. Like, what's the first thing that you pack when you go on holiday?
It's quite a boring one, but it's the adapter and
The extension cord. Come on, we've got another...
Because of your speakers, everything's linked to that. That does determine your vibe if you forget that.
Mm.
So maybe from that perspective, it's kind of in keeping. What, but yes, adapter and...
Adapter and speakers or extension cord?
Extension cord. Okay, everything cool. Flows from there.
And then final question for me before we let you go today. What's on the horizon in terms of holiday? Where would you like to go to? Because obviously you work very hard. I'm sure you like to play hard as well, right? So, what's next on the list for you?
So, we're going to Puglia in Italy, I think. Yeah.
I can't go because I'm on my brother's stag do. But yeah, don't even get me into that.
For a few days?
It's right in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's one to look forward to. My fiance and I like to go to Jamaica as often as possible.
Mm.
Because we got family. I've got family there. It's you got to do a pod on Jamaica.
I'm going to Barbados, so expect one on there shortly. Yeah.
But my cousin is getting married, I think, in Tobago this year.
So okay, nice.
Going there for summer, and then we've been invited to a safari trip in South Africa.
Oh, mad team.
October, one of our friends. So. Yeah, those things to look forward to. Just trying to, I think because I've got less annual leave in my new place, I need to almost get there and book this stuff up and work out if I've got any spare days because lots of things have come up this year and they're going to keep us busy.
But I think, I'm just going to round off by saying that I think that's like the perfect representation, right? That even though Alex is a really hard worker and has done all of these things, he's leaving the time to enjoy himself, right? And look, he might not even have enough holiday days. And I think no matter how hard you work in life, you've got to remember to take the time for yourself and for your loved ones and for your family. Alex, with that, you know, thank you so much for joining us on the pod today. I've loved it.
Thanks,
I don't know if you want to plug any socials.
I'm not on any socials.
There we go. Not on any socials, people. I love that. I'll put some stuff in the show notes. If you've made it to the end of this episode, guys, you know what to do. Like, subscribe at @vibesandtribes_. Make sure you show us some love, people. With that, Alex, thank you so much, man. Over and out.